This is NHPR News.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Mitt Romney kicks off a bus tour this weekend, visiting swing states like Florida and Ohio, and further tantalizing journalists who've been speculating for weeks over who he'll choose for vice president. The presumptive Republican nominee doesn't have much time left to decide. His party's convention in Tampa, Florida, is a week from Monday. In the meantime, though, the Romney campaign seems happy to draw out the suspense, thereby attracting even more press coverage and more conjecture over who's on his VP list and who isn't. But vice presidential selection hasn't always been such a waiting game. Up until the Franklin Roosevelt years, party bosses at the convention chose who'd be their ticket's number two. Then the powerful and popular FDR insisted upon selecting his own VP, and from there on out, the process became more and more directed by the presidential campaign. Today in The Exchange, a running mate for Mitt Romney. We begin the hour with Joel Goldstein. He's a professor at St. Louis University and author of the book The Modern American Vice Presidency, The Transformation of a Political Institution. And Professor Goldstein, thanks for your time. We appreciate it.
Oh, it's great being with you, Laura.
Well, you are one of the country's experts on the vice presidency, and every 4 years, as I understand, you get a lot of calls from reporters. Describe the buildup that you see leading up to this announcement this time around, Professor Goldstein.
Well, we're in the final stage, but we don't know exactly when it'll be. It clearly will be before the convention, but it could be any time in almost a three-week period. The Romney campaign can use this the interest as a way of building up interest in the campaign activities, beginning with the bus tour that's scheduled tomorrow through some key states.
Yeah, Florida, North Carolina, Ohio, Virginia, further tantalizing reporters, right, Professor Goldstein, who are just wondering when it's coming.
Reporters and political junkies and citizens all.
When did this process, Professor Goldstein, become such a huge game of speculation with all the ink and time devoted to lists going back and forth? When did this really turn as big a deal as it seems to be now?
Well, it's something that folks in New Hampshire have a particular interest in a way, because the vice presidential speculation period really came with the change in the presidential nominating process. It used to be that the presidential nomination was actually really decided the third night at the convention. And after the presidential nomination was decided, people first turned their attention to the vice presidential nomination. But as the presidential primaries and caucuses grew and got to the point, in the mid-1970s, where they really became this decisive event, it created this period of time where the presidential nomination was decided at the latest in June and sometimes as early as February or March, and then the biggest story became who was going to be the running mate. It changed the whole dynamic of choosing a running mate, and it created this period of anywhere from 4 or 5 months to 5 or 6 weeks where that was the focus. And so we have this this period of speculation, of vetting, of vice presidential candidates, in effect, going around and, in effect, campaigning sort of publicly for the job.
The Veep stakes, as they call it now. You've written, Professor Goldstein, that the key requirement for a running mate is whether he or she is presidential. And that seems obvious to me, but you also write, it's curious that this threshold factor is often overlooked. What are you trying to say there?
Well, a lot of times when people start speculating or trying to put together a short list, they start with saying, well, so-and-so is from a big swing state, or so-and-so is from an important demographic group. And I think that's the wrong place to start. I think that in our recent history, if you look at most of the vice presidential selections on from both parties, they've been people who were really pretty able and pretty plausible presidents. I think that's the place where really candidates begin. They begin by narrowing the field generally. There's some exceptions, but generally to people who would make plausible presidents and to people who don't have anything in their background that's too embarrassing to handle. And once you get to that smaller list, then you can start looking at factors. Do we need to appeal to a demographic? What's the message a particular choice will send about a the presidential candidate? Can somebody help us in a key state? But the threshold criteria really is, as it should be, is this person somebody who is a plausible president?
You know, it's often said that while a perfectly suitable vice presidential nominee could help the ticket somewhat, the flip side is an unsuitable nominee can hurt a lot. What do you think about that calculation, Professor Goldstein?
Well, I think that's right, that a vice presidential candidate is probably more likely to hurt if he or she's not ready for prime time than one is likely to make a huge difference. I think people make a mistake, though, in thinking that the vice presidential choice doesn't matter. In part, to the extent that it doesn't matter, it's because usually presidential candidates do a pretty good job in selecting their running mate. If Governor Romney were to pick, for instance, Herman Cain or Michelle Bachmann, there'd be a party at the West Wing, because that would be a choice that presumably would hurt Governor Romney. He's not going to make those kind of choices. He's going to make a choice that is less likely to hurt. In a close election, though, a vice presidential candidate can make a difference, in part based upon the messages that the selection sends about the presidential candidate, based in part on his or her popularity in particular key areas of the country or with key demographic groups.
Well, Professor Goldstein, thanks a lot for taking the time with us this morning. We appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure, Laura. Thank you for having me.
That's Joel Goldstein, again, professor of law at St. Louis University and author of The Modern American Vice Presidency, The Transformation of a Political Institution. Today in The Exchange, we're vetting the VP candidates, looking at what this process means for the Romney campaign. And let's hear from you. What do you think a vice presidential nominee should bring to this ticket? How important a choice do you think this is? What kind of a person would help Romney? What kind of a person wouldn't? And if you were the one in charge of this process, who would you pick for that number two position? Give us a call. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page. And with us in studio is Andy Smith, professor of political science at UNH, director of the UNH Survey Center. Andy, welcome. Good to see you.
Good morning, Laura.
Also with us, Fergus Cullen, principal of Fergus Cullen Communications and former chairman of the New Hampshire Republican Party. Fergus, good morning. Thank you for coming in as well.
You bet. Thank you.
Also with us, Dante Scala, associate professor of political science at UNH. And Dante, good morning. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Laura.
Well, and Dante, to you first, following up on what Professor Goldstein said, how much does this matter?
It matters a little. In the whole scheme of things in an election, I think what it pales in comparison, say, to the state of the economy, what voters think about the direction of the country, and so forth. What people have found is it does matter a little bit concretely in terms of the home state where the vice president comes from. We actually had a grad student at UNH, Sean McKinley, do a study of this, and he found it mattered a couple of points in a positive direction, a couple percentage points in the home state of the vice presidential candidate. And Nate Silver from the 538 blog of the New York Times found a similar result this past spring.
So the home state, not for the nation overall.
Not the nation as a whole. Just, you know, for instance, if Mitt Romney picks Marco Rubio from Florida, one might expect Romney to get perhaps more or less a 2-point bounce in Florida. But 2-point percentage points in Florida could matter in a close election. And this looks like a close election.
What do you think, Andy? Does it matter as much as it seems to matter given all the attention?
I think the attention is really what we're talking about. This is August. It's the month where news goes to die. And in the election campaign, this is the time when nothing really is going on. You got the Olympics to distract the public even more than the beaches and vacations are. So this is a time for political journalists to speculate and talk about all these various candidates. And I think it drives a lot of the media coverage, but it really doesn't do much in terms of impacting the election. It's largely, I think, filling time during a dead period. And I think that's one of the things that the Romney campaign has done an excellent job of, is they know that the press got nothing else to talk about, and they've been just floating these names out weekly, and one guy's up, oh, this guy's down, another person's up, and what about Condi Rice? And the press goes off running these stories about these people, and all of that is good news. And they've also done it, I think, very smartly by picking people or speculating about people in key states, which gives them a double boost because it helps that person like a Kelly Ayotte in New Hampshire. It boosts her reputation within New Hampshire, but it also means that in New Hampshire now, local press is going to be covering the Romney campaign, and it's just free media for
them. So stretch it out as long as possible.
Absolutely. Keep people guessing.
What do you think, Fergus? Do voters really care about ticket balance, winning key states or balancing with certain constituencies, or do they care more, as Professor Goldstein said, that this person really is capable of being a heartbeat away?
Yeah, and I think that is the threshold that any candidate has to reach. And, you know, as a Republican, I'll acknowledge that when the Republicans nominated Sarah Palin 4 years ago, she failed to qualify for that critical test. Is this person prepared to be president of the United States on day two? And, you know, if generals are always preparing to fight the last war, Republicans picking a vice presidential candidate are looking at the Sarah Palin experience last time around. You know, the idea that a home state nominee might deliver an extra couple of points, and let's talk about Kelly Ayotte for a moment, Senator Ayotte. I mean, think about this. Think about all your friends and whether you think they're voting for the president or they're voting for Romney. How many of them are likely to change their minds or to vote for Romney because Kelly Ayotte was on the ticket who weren't already planning to vote for Romney?
So it doesn't make that much difference.
Maybe it is a point or two, you know, but in a state like New Hampshire with four electoral votes versus Ohio, where Rob Portman is from, or Florida, where Senator Rubio is from, I'm just skeptical when you're talking about one or two people out of 100 who might actually change their behavior based on a favorite son or a favorite daughter.
So it doesn't really matter that much in terms of elections, Fergus, in terms of delivering a couple extra votes.
You know, if Dan Quayle couldn't sink a ticket, nobody can. That's sort of one of the operating guides here, too.
Andy.
There's an interesting thing. If you just go back and look at the VPs who've been selected or the candidates who've been selected recently, you've got Delaware, Alaska, Wyoming, Connecticut, Tennessee.
Not exactly huge states.
They're not huge states, and they're not even really swing states.
No.
So it's not that the candidates have been choosing vice presidents historically. Now, maybe this is a unique election, but it's been for other reasons.
All right. Well, coming up, we'll start naming names, speculating on what some of these names might bring or take away from the Romney ticket. You can join us with your choices, 1-800-892-6477. We'll be right back.
It's The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio. Good morning, I'm Mike Danielli. Classical New Hampshire is a classical music service in the Granite State, a partnership between NHPR and Highland Community Broadcasting. Classical New Hampshire brings the best classical music performances from around the world to New Hampshire. Online everywhere at classicalnh.org. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and from People's United Bank, providing individual mortgage solutions for new and existing mortgages. People's United Bank, what know-how can do. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. And from Warner Historical Society's Torrey Hill Author Series, presenting Agora Financial Publisher Addison Wiggin. That's Saturday, August 11th at 7 p.m. at Warner Town Hall. TorreyHillAuthorSeries.com.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, who are the vice presidential hopefuls and what does each possible choice bring to the Romney campaign? Speculation is running wild as the Republican convention approaches, and the presumptive Republican nominee hasn't made his number two choice yet. Join us, 1-800-892-6477. If you were the one in charge, who would you choose for that heartbeat away slot? What kind of person do you think would help the Romney ticket? What kind of person wouldn't? And how important a choice do you think this is in the first place? How much does it really sway voters one way or the other? 1-800-892-6477 is our number. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. We have three guests, Dante Scala with UNH, Andy Smith, director of the UNH Survey Center, and Fergus Cullen, principal of Fergus Cullen Communications, former chairman of the New Hampshire Republican Party. One more time, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 877-381-4477. And guys, in the last couple days, there's been this sort of war going on in the press over whether Mr. Romney should go bold or go safe. What do you think, Dante?
Well, you know, it does, the vice presidential pick doesn't matter in the whole scheme of things in November, but it does tell us two things. It tells us something about Mitt Romney's thinking about himself, about the campaign, and about what his presidency would look like. And this is Romney's decision. You know, he's habitually cautious about really revealing anything too much about his policy positions, et cetera, but this will be a statement about Romney. And it's also a window into the Republican Party itself, because conservatives are nervous about Mitt Romney for two reasons. One is that despite an economy that's struggling at best, they look at the polls and they say, why is Barack Obama still ahead of our guy? Now, you can discount a lot of the head-to-head polls and so forth. It is early, but it's a cause for nerves. The other cause for nerves is conservatives in the Republican Party want a president who's going to be a clear alternative to Barack Obama, who's going to roll back what Obama did with his term in office. And they're a little nervous about what Mitt Romney and whether Romney's up to the task, frankly. I mean, there was a whole little controversy this week about having a Romney spokesperson speak well of Romney care, and that put conservatives all in a flutter. How dare Mitt Romney talk about Romney care as a good thing in Massachusetts? And here we go. So this whole talk about whether to go bold, which means go with a conservative, more ideological pick, is kind of a proxy for we're still a little nervous about Mitt Romney.
What do you think, Fergus? Go bold, go safe?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Mitt Romney has been a very risk-averse candidate from day one. I mean, even throughout the primaries, and somebody like me, and I'm a strong Romney supporter, but would certainly like to see him be bolder along the way. But for those conservatives on the right wing who may not have been big Romney supporters in primary season, look, they're antagonistic about the president. They're going to turn out. They're going to be focused on defeating Barack Obama, even if they're only lukewarm about Mitt Romney. I don't think that they really need to worry about shoring up the base. Now, if you're from the policy and ideas division of the conservative movement, as I consider myself, you know, somebody like Bobby Jindal, somebody like Paul Ryan really makes you excited. That is both bold and also somebody who's capable and qualified, whereas sort of a bold pick on somebody who's much less tested, someone like Marco Rubio, who's barely been in federal office, Kelly Ayotte falls under that category, would be a much riskier bold pick. So you can, you know, and it's partly doubling down. You know, if you're going to pay the penance, commit the sin. The Democrats are going to say Republicans are going to push grandma off the cliff and are going to take away Medicare. Well, why not put up Paul Ryan, the most articulate defender about entitlement reform that the conservative movement has? So that is a way to be bold, have your cake and ice cream at the same time.
So there's bold and then there's bold untested. And Paul Ryan, Wisconsin representative, member of Congress since the late 90s, Bobby Jindal, Louisiana governor since 07. Those are two gentlemen who you feel, Fergus, would be a bold choice, but also a good choice.
Absolutely. I mean, I'd be very excited about either one of those two people on the ticket.
All right. Let's take some of your calls, your choices, your thoughts on this process. 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, 1-800-892-6477. And up first is Harold in Webster. Hi, Harold. Thanks for calling
Hi,
in. Go ahead. Sure.
You? I think you all missed an important answer to the question of does it matter? And what I think is most important is it matters because it tells us more about the candidate, not the vice presidential candidate, but the candidate himself, how they make decisions. The McCain appointment, I think, showed us many of the flaws and weaknesses in the way he operates. But I think that's what I would be looking for.
So it tells us just as much about the presidential candidate as it does about the number two person. Is that you're saying, Harold?
Yeah. Yeah.
Thanks for the call. What do you think, Andy Smith?
I think that's absolutely the case, and I think that's the way that Romney's played this. They've been cautious. They've been floating names out. They've been letting the press do a lot of the vetting for these candidates. So each time a name floats up, a lot of research is done on that potential name. And it shows, I think, one of the two things that really have to come into play when you're choosing a vice presidential candidate. First is this person has to be acceptable to a broad range of the party. It can't just be somebody who's really a darling of one wing of the party or not. This is true Democrat or Republican. And the second thing is that you have to follow like the Hippocratic Oath here. First, do no harm. You don't want to get somebody that's going to hurt you or make you look bad as a president. So the process that Romney is going through, I believe, is looking at those things. But I think the third thing, and this is the one thing we kind of forget about with politics, as political scientists, we like to get into the forces and the movements and the meanings and so forth. But the personal relationship that this person has with the president is really going to be important. Is this a person they can work with? Is this a person that they trust? Is this a person that they feel comfortable around, that they know can go out and speak for the administration? That, I think, is a very important thing. And I think with Romney, who's been a very cautious person, he's had a long-term group of people around him, I think this is going to be something that's maybe more important for him than it has been for some other politicians.
The Hippocratic Oath of VP selection. You heard it here first.
Don't shoot your, or maybe you say, don't shoot yourself in the foot.
All right. 1-800-892-6477 is the phone number here in the exchange. Join us with your thoughts, questions, comments on this vice presidential selection that the Romney campaign is approaching. An announcement should be made in the next couple days or so. Who would you pick if you were in charge? 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. Gentlemen, here's an email from Christopher in Manchester. My choices. Now we're getting into the names, all right? Condoleezza Rice, Christy Todd Whitman, or Chris Christie. This person must be from New Jersey. He says, moving it to the center to attract independence makes sense to me. Thank you so much for that email, Christopher. Couple things, gentlemen. First, Fergus, to you, the second part of his email, moving it to the center to attract independence makes sense to me. As a Republican, does it make sense to you?
Well, I don't think it's no, because the election is about a contrast. It's about a difference. And, you know, Reagan classified it as having, broad colors and not pale pastels. You know, Romney doesn't have a problem with his right wing because, again, they're going to be focused on President Obama. Whereas 4 years ago, John McCain was also not the darling of the conservatives. He needed somebody to bring Sarah Palin did that to bring those people on board. And as much, you know, I've talked about Palin already, but, you know, as much as she has become a parody in the last couple of years, it's important to remember when she was picked, she was electrifying. Look, I was state party chairman at the time. We had like no volunteers for the McCain campaign. When Palin got named, the phone was ringing off the hook. People were coming into the headquarters. I was at the convention. I was in the second row when she gave her electrifying speech, and she was great off the bat. She didn't wear well when she quit the job as governor of Alaska the following year. I parted company with Sarah Palin as a credible candidate at that. But again, you know, this is a choice between stark differences. And you have a Democrat who has been absolutely embodied the party of big government versus Romney, who's going to be trimming that back, as Dante said, rolling back. And I don't think the party needs to be worried about appealing to the middle in that way.
Well, it's interesting. We had Frank Newport in here yesterday, Dante, editor-in-chief at the Gallup organization. Real interesting conversation. And he said, this is a base election, basically. This isn't about convincing the 1 or 2% of swing voters who might still be out there.
Yeah, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie is an interesting kind of wild card in this regard, because you hear him on the stump, you know, talking for Mitt Romney and so forth. He is sounds like a vociferous partisan. He's been mentioned to give the keynote address at the Republican convention. And I think Christie could light up a crowd in a way that's reminiscent perhaps of the way Sarah Palin lit up the crowd back in 2008. On the other hand, he's a blue state governor. He takes some moderate views on issues. I don't know if he passes the kind of ideological test among hardcore conservatives. The other problem, again, and this gets back to Andy's point about the chemistry between among the people on a ticket, Chris Christie is a big, big personality from New Jersey, and I'm from New Jersey. They come big personalities out there, and the question is, you don't want your running mate to upstage the guy at the top of the ticket, and that was part of the problem with Palin and McCain by the time that November of 2008 rolled around. And so the question is, does Romney want someone who's clearly going to be comfortable in that second banana role?
And New Jersey, by the way, you called it a blue state. I thought it was more purplish. They've had Republican governors there.
Once upon a time, yeah, and Christie is an example of that. But I think you'd be hard-pressed to make the case that even Chris Christie could turn around New Jersey and put it in the Republican column because it's moved that far Democratic, say, over the last couple of decades.
And Andy, to you, Christy Todd Whitman, mm-hmm. our emailer, says that that's not a name I've even seen come up. She's way moderate.
No, I think Whitman, Christy Todd Whitman and Condi Rice are both wouldn't pass that second test. Would they be acceptable to all wings of the party? Both of them have been pro-choice, and I don't think that that's something that most of the Republican Party would accept. I think that would just really annoy the conservatives so much that they might just say, despite what Ferguson said, a number of them might just say, heck with it, we're going home.
Well, go ahead, Ferguson.
But when running against an incumbent, it does give you a little bit more leeway than when it's an open seat. I just want to
because
make that
people
point.
Want that seat so badly back.
Again, they can focus on, let's just defeat Barack Obama. And on the chemistry question, the chemistry issue is points in favor of Tim Pawlenty. You know, when you think about it, Ronald Reagan picked one of his rivals, George H.W. Bush. Barack Obama picked one of his rivals, Joe Biden. The only other candidate who ran for president this cycle is even being considered is Tim Pawlenty, and that speaks to the chemistry that they have. Pawlenty got out early. He never attacked Mitt Romney. In fact, that's part of why he had to bail out of the campaign a year ago. When he was in debt, the Romney campaign helped him get out of that debt. Tim Pawlenty, is going to be in New Hampshire tonight doing a fundraiser on behalf of Romney. He's going to be in state campaigning on his behalf tomorrow. Clearly, he's got that going on for him. I will say 4 years ago, again, I remember being in Minnesota when Palin got picked and hearing Tim Pawlenty, the governor of Minnesota, being interviewed on local radio that morning, sounding completely deflated.
He was a possibility.
4 years
yeah.
ago, and it was he couldn't mask it. He was clearly bitterly disappointed about not having been selected. He reminded me of that gymnast Maroney, sitting on the silver medal plan with that grimace on her face.
Well, thanks for the email, Christopher. Again, our email address for you to join us with your thoughts or your choices if you were the one making this decision. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Our phone number is 1-800-892-6477. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And gentlemen, let's go next to, Bill in West Deering. Go ahead, Bill, you're on the air.
Hi, Laura. Thank you for having me on, and I really do enjoy your show.
Good, thanks, Bill.
Listening to one of the gentlemen there trying to say how great Paul Ryan is, should go to Rob Zurbin's website in Wisconsin. The gentleman's going to run against him. This was in Common Dreams, written in an article by John Nichols, and exposes the phoniness of Mr. Ryan. And it's just amazing anyone could consider him if they have an open mind and they read anything.
Rob Zurbin. Is that who you said, Bill?
Yes.
Okay, and who is that?
Well, he's the candidate running against Paul Ryan. And he has some very factual exposés, and he's not a very pretty picture of Mr. Ryan.
Okay. Is the caller a swing voter, or is he a Barack Obama supporter?
I have no idea.
Thanks a lot for calling in. You know, others have said, Andy Smith, that Paul Ryan, there's a big Paul Ryan yes or no now. Some people are nervous about Paul Ryan.
I think the biggest problems that Paul Ryan presents is, first off, he's somebody who comes out of the real policy wonk wing of either party. He's a guy that's been into the weeds so much that it's difficult to, despite his skills, it's difficult to picture him as anything but a policy wonk on a very important issue, budgetary issues, but to get him from that. He does not have the charisma that a Chris Christie has or a Condi Rice or somebody like that. He's kind of a small guy. He just maybe doesn't look the part. But the bigger thing I think that his weakness is he's only been elected to Congress. He's not been elected in a statewide office. He hasn't had to develop the fundraising networks that the somebody who's run for Senate or for governor has. And I think that's another one of the major important things is that the people who are that you see get chosen are ones who have been in the party long enough to develop all of those relationships, in particular those fundraising relationships that allow them to bring a lot more political support to the table than a congressman would.
Dante, go ahead.
Yeah, I think the pros for Paul Ryan is, I think a lot of I mean, conservatives, and I think they're right, would love to see Paul Ryan debate Joe Biden in the vice presidential debate in, I guess, October. And that's because Paul Ryan is a policy wonk, and he knows he can present an alternative vision of where the country should go. Now, the big issue, Paul Ryan, because he's head of the Budget Committee in the House of Representatives, is about the whole question of the federal deficit and what needs to be done to the budget in order to solve the deficit problem. Now, that includes things that are very controversial, including a very significant reform of the Medicare program, including, you know, creating vouchers for people under a certain age so that, you know, if you're, say, 45 or so, you won't have the same guaranteed benefits necessarily that you do now.
Let me jump in, Dante, because Fergus mentioned this earlier, and I've seen other people say the same thing. The idea that, look, you know, Democrats are going to say Republicans are going to push grandma off the cliff no matter who the VP nominee is. So why not pick somebody bold and smart and young and attractive?
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's a plausible argument. And the, will it be that much worse if we're talking about Romney Ryan all the way? Now, I guess the danger is for Mitt Romney, you're going to be talking more about Medicare and budget deficits than about the economy, because it seems to me the Romney campaign is based on a very simple proposition. Talk about the economy, but from now until November, and you win.
All right. I have to ask you about one more choice that has gotten a lot of play. Actually, two more. But since we're heading into a break, I'll just ask about one. And Fergus, this is for you. Lots of attention to Marco Rubio, a Florida senator since 2010, former Speaker of the Florida House.
Yeah, and part of it is the changing face demographically of both the party and the conservative movement. Marco Rubio is 41. He's only, of course, been in the U.S. Senate for a year and a half. I think that he was a much hotter vice presidential commodity 3-4 months ago. His stock has clearly cooled off since. Because, again, there is that fundamental question, is this person prepared to be president on day two? And I'm not sure, personally, that Marco Rubio meets that threshold. But, you know, from a key swing state in Florida, look, Republicans cannot win elections by getting 110% of the white male vote. It, the math doesn't work. And so the demographics, especially of the Hispanic community, is really going to be the battleground of winning presidential and national elections in the future. And Rubio helps the party address that issue.
The one big problem is that he comes from the small wing of the Hispanic community within the U.S. He's Cuban. He doesn't have Mexican origin or South American origin. And there are a lot of the Hispanics in the United States, the majority of them are Hispanic origin, and they don't really take to the Cubans as much as we would think they would. So Hispanics are not a unified bloc here.
All right. Well, lots of more of your calls and emails after a short break. You can join us 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. We'll be right back.
It's 9:39. You're listening to The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio, where support comes from you, our members, and from Farnham Hill Ciders, featuring summer cider, dry, sharp, fruity, and orchard made at Poverty Lane Orchards. Now available at New Hampshire wine and liquor outlet stores. And from the Curry Museum of Art in Manchester, presenting the first museum exhibition of Eric Aho paintings. Details at courier.org. This is NHPR.
August 18th is fast approaching. NHPR's summer car raffle ends at noon on the 18th, as do your chances of winning a brand new hybrid car, donated in part by Grapponi Automotive Group. I'm Laura Canoy. If you're our winner, you'll get to choose from either a Ford Fusion or a Toyota Prius. Tickets are just $50 each. Call 1-888-805-6477 to get your tickets or go to our website, nhpr.org. But don't wait. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Canoy. Today in The Exchange, we're playing the vice presidential guessing game. Who might be Mitt Romney's choice and what that selection could bring to the ticket? Join us 1-800-892-6477. If you were the one in charge of this process, who would you pick for that all-important number two position? What qualities do you think a vice presidential nominee should bring to a ticket? How important a choice do you think this is? What kind of a person might help Mr. Romney and what kind of a person would not? Our number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us a short email, the address exchange@nhpr.org. You can also post your comments on our Facebook page. And Dante Scala, Fergus Cullen, Andy Smith, let's go right back to our callers. Kathy's joining us from Keene. Hi, Kathy, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Morning.
I think there's a woman whose name hasn't been named. She's both presidential, I think, and happens to be a native of Keene, New Hampshire. Heather Wilson has been a congresswoman from New Mexico and is running for the Senate in New Mexico. She's a graduate of the Air Force Academy, a Rhodes Scholar, served our country in the Air Force, served under the first George Bush National Security Council. And
from Keene, New Hampshire, Kathy.
Yes, and the first female veteran to serve in the U.S. Congress.
Wow. Well, thank you for calling. You learn something new every day, gentlemen. Anyone want to jump in on Heather Wilson?
I think so far she's not a name that I've heard, and it's certainly not a name that's probably at the top of anyone's list, but hearing the resume that she's rattled off, this is the kind of a person, if she can win the Senate race, might be an excellent choice another cycle 4 years or 8 years from now.
Right. Interesting.
She's a former congresswoman in New Mexico who lost a Senate race 2 years ago and now has an opportunity to run again for a different seat there, which is great because she could be New Hampshire's third senator.
Well, I have a question for you too, Dante, on this, and thanks again for the call, Kathy. Can somebody who most people have never heard of be considered a vice presidential nominee? You know, they've got great credentials. Sounds like Heather Wilson does. But if no one's ever heard of her outside of her state, do they even have a shot?
It's unlikely. I mean,
you have to have some presence on the national stage.
Yeah, and I think there, because along with the who's that test comes the is the person ready test. And the national media, I mean, you can only imagine. I mean, if someone came from out of the blue, the attitude of the national media will be, well, if we've never heard of the person, they certainly can't be qualified to be the vice president. And so that's, you know, that would certainly be a heavy, kind of heavy obstacle. Because again, getting back to what Andy was saying earlier, you certainly want to do no harm with your pick. And so if you came from with a pick from out of the blue, that could certainly raise the prospect for harm.
No, jump in, Andy.
And I think that the Republicans are not likely to do that simply because they have recent experience with picking somebody who's not known on the national stage, and that was Sarah Palin, completely unknown to people outside of Alaska, unknown to the national media when she was chosen in 2008. I don't think they're going to go anywhere near that sort of a choice again. Whether or not it really hurt or helped McCain is regardless, but I don't think they're going to do that.
All right. Well, Kathy, thanks a lot for joining us. And our number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page. And one more follow-up from Kathy's call. And Fergus, I think I'll give this one to you. Early on in this vice presidential sweepstakes, say a month ago, there were a lot of female names on the lists: Kelly Ayotte, Nikki Haley, Condoleezza Rice. There's another woman. I think her last name is Martinez. I can't remember the first name.
Susanna Martinez.
Thank you. Now, Fergus, in the last couple of days, the lists by the pundits, no women on those lists whatsoever.
Well, you know, I'm reminded a little bit of 2000 when Al Gore was going through this process, and Jean Shaheen's name was always on these lists. And I got to say, it smacked of tokenism then, and sometimes it can smack of tokenism today in this cycle as well. I don't think she was ever seriously being considered, but it was important for the Gore campaign to have one woman on the list of names that people were mentioning in conversations like this and in newspaper stories. And, you know, we went through this idea that, you know, somebody who doesn't have any national profile, who'd been the governor of a small state, who hadn't served in Washington in any federal capacity at all. And it was never really all that serious. And that's sometimes how politics works, but we should recognize it when we see it.
So is that what they did with Kelly Ayotte as well? Was that tokenism for the women's vote?
Well, the fact is the Republican bench is getting stronger in terms of elected women office holders. We've had several of those names mentioned, but it has been a problem in the past in terms of putting people into the pipeline who develop the kind of experience that makes them credible candidates. And we saw this in the presidential primaries this year, where Michelle Bachmann was the only woman Republican candidate. She wasn't qualified to serve, in my opinion, and that of many others. But, you know, she held her own in the debates. I think 4 years from now, 8 years from now, when it's an open seat after two terms of President Romney, we'll probably have some really good, strong, credible Republican women candidates.
Our phone number again for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. We're talking about the vice presidential selection process. What do you think about how this process has been run so far? What kind of a person do you think Mr. Romney should put as his number two on the ticket? Join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange at nhpr.org. Lots of emails I'd like to share with you, gentlemen. Here's another one from Mike in Ossipee. Dante, this is for you. He says J.C. Watts would be a good conservative to even the ticket. J.C. Watts being a former congressman from Oklahoma and an African-American.
Yeah, for sure. Congressman Watts spent a long time on the bench now. I mean, he's been out of office for a while and so forth. Unlikely that Romney will go that deep into the Republican past at this point to pick. I mean, if he was going to go with a congressman, I think much more likely to pick one, a current congressman, but someone who's, again, kind of got more of a profile and a going concern in politics than J.C. Watts has at this point.
Any other thoughts on J.C. Watts, gentlemen? He has been out of retirement for a while.
The one thing that he has, just speculating, he's been in talk radio for quite a bit, and he's a very articulate guy who can speak a conservative message to the conservative voters. But again, back to Fergus's point, I don't think that Romney needs to get the conservative Republicans motivated right now.
All right. Well, Mike, I appreciate the email again, and the address is exchange@nhpr.org. And gentlemen, we just have less than 10 minutes left, and there's a couple other names that we really need to put out there. And Andy, for you, here's one name that comes up all the time, often first on the list, Rob Portman, a senator from Ohio, previously a congressman from the Cincinnati area.
Absolutely. Rob Portman has been, I think, top of the list. I still think that he's the front runner for this position. Yeah, I think he is. He's got a lot going for him. He's had congressional experience. He's a senator from a major state, a state that the Republicans have to win. So if it comes down to winning 1 or 2 percentage points, Ohio is a state that they really have to win, so that would be a critical thing there. The Romney people have been very close to him. He's been close to Romney people, I guess I should say. He was seen to be integral in their winning Ohio in the primary this year, so that's something that they look to. He's a Dartmouth guy, so there's some things here for New Hampshire's, and he's incredibly well accepted within the party. He's seen as somebody who is absolutely safe to pretty much all wings of the party.
Boy, that's a tough position to be in.
Not a lot of charisma. He's not going to upstage Romney on the stump, but he's a really solid guy who does pass the first test that you could see him as a president.
Fergus?
Yeah, this is like going to the ice cream stand and saying, I'd like 2 scoops of vanilla, please. But it's very safe. There's no question about it. You know, as I've heard Joe Scarborough say, Romney, Portman, even the bumper sticker puts you to sleep. It's a little bit like this panel, 3 middle-aged white guys. but it is safe. It is sturdy, and it is qualified.
That's what people want right now.
Yeah, absolutely. This would be the opposite of Bolt, but it would be very secure. And I agree with Andy that I consider Rob Portman the front runner and the most likely choice.
And there's another one whose name is mentioned shortly after Senator Portman's. And Dante, that's Robert McDonnell, Virginia governor since 2009.
Yeah, certainly he's a possibility. Virginia is at the epicenter of the 2012 presidential elections. And if both camps recognize Virginia as essential to a victory, and so therefore, you know, putting McDonnell on the ticket would make some sense. Now, unlike Portman, I think McDonnell's recognized as more of a social conservative. So given the, you know, all the discussion about, you know, the so-called war on women and so forth, McDonnell would feed into that narrative a bit, given his past in Virginia, given some of the discussion about abortion legislation in Virginia and so forth. But certainly he makes the case, although he's not, I don't think he's quite as safe a pick as Portman would be. But he doesn't scream establishment as loudly as Portman does. I mean, Portman's someone who worked for both Bushes, both father and son. And so, again, if you're a conservative who wants to see a change and is thinking about well, we want someone who's going to roll back the Obama administration. Portman has a history of bipartisanship, and it's kind of the nature of, well, both parties today, that history of bipartisanship is viewed with suspicion. And so Portman would be seen again as this, well, yeah, that's what we're, Romney, Portman, that's the kind of administration this is going to be. It's not going to be a clear change.
So not exciting to the Tea Party.
Not exciting.
More of that sort of old style business wing of the Republican Party.
Yeah, I think McDonnell will be marginally more helpful in that regard, although not, again, not a big exciting name.
Let's see if we can bring in one more caller. This is Patrick on Lake Winnipesaukee. Hi, Patrick. Go ahead.
Hi, how are you?
Fine.
I think that all this talk of experience is kind of a tough one to swallow after we have a president who had no experience really doing anything before he became the president of the United States. And secondly, he's a very exciting, charismatic person, so Romney doesn't have those qualities. He really needs somebody to excite, the electorate, because unfortunately it is a popularity contest just as much as it is, a experience contest, which we're living with right now, somebody with no experience.
So, Patrick, who would you pick, given that you feel that charisma and excitement are important? Who would you pick? I'm curious.
Well, I think the Marco Rubio choice is very exciting. I've lived in Florida, and I know he's a very popular figure. He's got a great story. He doesn't have a ton of, dirt behind him. So, you're really, it's tough, with Obama as well, because, no one wants to play any kind of race card or this or that, and the same thing holds true, with Rubio. So, and Condoleezza Rice is another example of that. So,
yeah, except I don't think she wants it. I think she's made some pretty Sherman-esque statements, right, Andy? Condoleezza Rice has said, no thank you, no thank you, no thank you, no thank you.
Yeah, I don't think that Condi Rice would be there. And again, I don't think she's accepted. The big donors like Condi Rice in the Republican Party, but the conservative wing of the party, I don't think will take it. I did talk with some insiders, Republican insiders before this, and I kind of got a sense of the three top names that I'm hearing are Portman, and as Fergus was talking about earlier, Tim Pawlenty as a number two, and Paul Ryan is the number three. So if you're thinking about what the choices that Romney's going to make, he's got a guy like Portman, very established, well-known within the political circles. You've got Pawlenty, who's been a rival, who's been vetted on the national stage, shows that he has the presidential characteristics and is a loyal supporter. And then you got Tim Ryan, who would be that choice for the intellectual choice, somebody who can really explain the conservative policies, who really makes a clear difference between the administration. So I think Romney, just with those three people, it really offers Romney a pretty broad range of choices to go through.
Well, quick question on his point on Marco Rubio, and maybe for you, Fergus. Patrick's saying, look, don't pick on Marco Rubio because he's only been in the Senate for a couple years. Actually, when you look at Marco Rubio's background, it looks similar to President Obama's. A couple years in the U.S. Senate, and a good experience in the Florida House or in the Illinois legislature, as with President Obama. So he's saying their experience is kind of comparable.
Republicans are feeling right now like we have an opportunity to win. I mean, there's basic optimism in the Republican Party. 4 years ago, there was basic pessimism. We thought we had a shot, but we weren't really – things didn't feel good. Right now, you've got an incumbent president who's under 50% in swing state after swing state. You've got the challenger, Mitt Romney, out-fundraising the incumbent president. Nobody expected that was going to happen. The idea that the Republicans would have more financial resources than the Democrats is something that was completely unexpected after Barack Obama broke all the records for fundraising 4 years ago. So we feel good about this. Let's not blow it. Let's not steal defeat from the jaws of victory is the sense among Republican activists right now. And so, if Romney were to fall short, oh, the recriminations that'll happen. The Tea Party will be saying, see, we told you should have put Bachman on the ticket. That would have been the difference. I mean, there'll be outright civil war should that happen. But really, Republicans are saying, let's not screw this up. We can win this.
But does Rubio mess that up in your calculation?
I don't think Rubio would harm the ticket at all. I think it would be broadly acceptable to the party. You know, the critics are going to say what they're going to say about his lack of experience. That, you know, the callers or from Lake Winnipesaukee, Patrick says that he doesn't have much dirt on him. Well, no one's perfect. Everyone's got a story to tell, and everyone's got a target to shoot at. So you're going to hear criticism about anybody.
Dante.
And as far as the excitement factor goes, ultimately, I think, I mean, we're not talking about it, whoever the vice presidential candidate is, in 3 weeks. And Romney hopes that we wouldn't be talking about the vice presidential candidate in 3 weeks, because if we are, there's something wrong with the candidate. There's a controversy. There's something that arose out of nowhere. Excitement comes from the head down. It's going to be excitement about either ousting Barack Obama, or it's excitement for Mitt Romney. But the idea that excitement is going to transfer from the vice president up, no matter how charismatic he or she is, it's just unlikely. I mean, there's just the vice presidential nominee is just one more piece of information for voters in a blizzard of information.
Well, Andy, when does he have to make this choice by? I mean, the convention's a week from Monday.
I think we're going to see it next week. After there's a bus tour that he's got on this weekend. Maybe right after that bus tour would be the thing to do, the time to do it. I think that you will see that whoever the VP candidate is will probably show up in Boston first and then probably come up to New Hampshire very quickly.
Well, it's not that far away. And I understand, Fergus, that the Romney campaign has an app for supporters to find out who the nominee is before those naughty reporters do. Do you have that app?
I do not. But, you know, 4 years ago, Barack Obama said, you know, you'll be the first to know if only you text us. And, of course, they're trying to collect cell phone numbers in that process. It worked very effectively. Republicans are catching up in terms of social media and new technology and applying it to campaigns.
All right. Well, all of you, this has been really fun. And we'll watch for that announcement next week. Andy Smith, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Andy Smith, director of the UNH Survey Center and a professor of political science there. Fergus Cullen, good to see you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Fergus Cullen, principal of Fergus Cullen Communications, former chairman of the New Hampshire Republican Party. Dante Scala, always a pleasure. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Dante Scala, associate professor of political science at UNH. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer today is Mike Danielli. Our producer is Ellen Graham. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Samantha Johnson. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange is now on Facebook. Become a fan of our Facebook page. You can learn more about upcoming shows, what we're planning, and get extra links and material. Our executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoi.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
Next week on The Exchange, we begin with the latest from Syria. A panel of local experts weighs in on what's happening and what the U.S. response might be. Then our coverage of the New Hampshire gubernatorial primary continues with Republican candidate Ovid Lamontagne. And later, adventures in the strange science of sleep. We talk with the author of a new book called Dreamland. Email us at nhpr.org and join us all next week for The Exchange, each morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. here on NHPR.
It's a minute before 10 o'clock. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and from Ansel & Anderson, Trust and